week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, fresh off the back of like a 10-minute bloodletting of rage from other things in life, so we're feeling good. Feeling good.
Coming. You know what? Episode. I'm just gonna.
What do you got there?
I've got the Stone Brewing. I've been tweeting this out a lot because I've been really excited about it. But
by the way, we're recording at 3:30 in the afternoon on a Wednesday.
Somebody was up at 3:30 a.m. this morning.
Say, you're
to go
already
work
like,
for Undisputed.
This is like nighttime for you right now.
Someone had to go work for Skip Bayless this morning, and someone needs it, and someone shouldn't be so judgy Judy about it, you know?
I'm concerned about your well-being. Wait, what's the brew?
No, so the beer that I've found out recently is a thing, one, and two, I can find it in a lot of places around my place. You know the band NoFX, the old punk band?
I do.
I'm sure you were in high school once and you liked that band like everybody else did. Yes. I still somewhat enjoy them. And they actually put out a combination with Stone Brewing, who does like Arrogant Bastard out of San Diego. Really good stuff out of there. They did a beer called a hoppy lager called Punk and Drublick, which is one of the names of their one of their most famous records. It came out in the 90s.
It's a spoon.
And it is a very tasty, delicious beer.
Delightful.
And I'm a big fan.
That sounds good.
For many reasons, but definitely, I'm glad that the beer actually tastes good, and I want to drink it a lot, because I'd buy it anyway for the name alone, and the partnership alone, but the fact that it's actually good gets a big thumbs up from me.
Solid. Solid.
Yeah.
I would join you in drinking, but I don't start my work day for another 2.5 hours, so we're like polar opposites.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. We are ships in the night, except we're talking to each other right now.
Well,
we're ships in the night with sonar.
Ships in the night with radios to communicate to each other. So welcome in. This is episode number 129 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Oh, I just remembered. I was supposed to go by Tyler and Kirsten's place and pick up my shirts today.
Yes, because I
just
gave
gonna
them
plug.
Info yeah,
just gonna plug our T-shirts. PurpleDinosaurPodcast.BigCartel.com. Humble Monster. The latest and greatest T-shirts on the planet in your Rockies fandom world, coming from Humble Monster, and Kirsten Merkel and Tyler Merkel, who I became best friends with at Anthony's wedding last year. They are the proprietors of Humble Monster. Texted me yesterday and said, hey, we got your shirts. When would you like and how would you like to get them? And I said, just leave them on your front porch. I'll come get them tomorrow. Totally spaced it. Now I got to do that tonight.
Yeah, you're all right. You'll live.
The
it's cool shirts.
That being... Go get your shirts. PurpleDinosaurPodcast.BigCartel.com. Your Walker Helton ballot shirts, campaign shirts. You can go get those now.
And, I have been wearing my Charlie Blackbeard shirt like all over the place lately.
You can also get your Charlie Blackbeard shirt.
Which one of their first ones.
Yeah.
And it's such an awesome shirt.
That was a pre-PDP shirt. They had that shirt before the show.
Yes, they did.
That's how OG Humble Monster is. OGHM.
Well, I get it.
Not so much.
Oh, I get it. I got it.
You get it? Okay.
I got it.
PurpleDinosaurPodcast.BigCartel.com. This entire episode is just going to be us shilling for our T-shirts. If you tuned in for any analysis about the Colorado Rockies,
we already plugged this beer from Stone Brewing in our own shirts.
One of which is not giving us any money. But hey, episode 129, welcome in. Your, my, and our Colorado Rockies finishing off a 5-2 road trip through the nation's capital and Pittsburgh. I don't know what else you would call Pittsburgh.
and the city that never sleeps. Yeah.
The nation's capital in Sin City, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And the Window City.
The Rockies get back-to-back series wins. They take 3 out of 4 in Washington, one game of which they walked double-digit opposing hitters and still somehow won. In a game started by Steven Strasburg, I have no idea how that game turned into a win.
Yeah, then that's going to be one we look at the end of the year and go,
yeah,
okay.
Go, all right, well, they could have lost that one pretty easily. So I guess you take some, you win some, you lose some. The follow-up to that 3-win-4-game series in Washington, 2 wins and 3 games in Pittsburgh. Today, I got out of the car when it was a 2-0 lead for the Rockies, got back into the car after an appointment. They were down 7-2, so not a great day from what I could tell.
Could be worse. The most amazing about this road trip that the Rockies went 5-2 on, as you mentioned, the Rockies in that time also went 4-37 with runners in scoring position, a hefty 108 average, and they won 5 of 7.
Yeah, it's not great, and they still won. And I don't get how any of that's going on.
They are doing stuff right now that is, I'm not sure if it's good or if it's
they're certainly doing stuff.
They're certainly doing stuff. They currently get about 54% of their total runs this year from the home run. I'm recording this on a Wednesday afternoon, as we mentioned. That is most in
Coors.
The league right now.
Coors.
They lead the league in home runs as we speak with 27 home runs.
Coors.
And yet they are in the bottom third in the league in hitting with runners in scoring position. And they are in the top 10 in the league. In team strikeouts.
The Rockies, by the way, have hit, the Rockies have played 6 home games. They've hit 7 homers in those 6 home games, but they've played 14 road games. They've hit 20 homers on the road. So it's not as though it's just way out of whack Coors.
It's not Coors.
Yeah. It's not Coors yet. Yeah, they're just smacking dongers, and yet somehow they're not hitting like anything else. Like, what is happening with this team? I don't get it.
Somehow, I worry a little bit, should this continue, that this team would have a very big, like, Texas Rangers feel from last year, and that's not necessarily a good thing. Because the Rangers hit a lot of big dongs last year, and they also struck out a bunch.
Yeah.
And if they do that, you saw what the Rangers did last year, it was not great. Now, the Rockies pitching, I believe, is better than Texas Rangers was last year, but... You know, you don't want to go all in on the launch angle if you're not going to make contact at all. But at the same time, at least they're hitting the ball in the air when they do it.
Unless they're Ian Desmond.
Yeah, well. Yeah, last year the Rangers were third in the league in home runs and fourth in the league in strikeouts.
Well, they had Joey Gallo, so that's like the perfect, perfect expounding on one player.
Yeah, and they ended the season last year 78-84.
Yeah, not great.
Which was not great.
Not great there.
So that, you know, it's obviously very early. The team is winning games. They are in fact over 500, a beautiful 11-9 record. Just 3 games behind the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are playing very good baseball. And the Dodgers have leapfrogged some people. Now they're no longer in last place, which is too bad. I really wanted them to be in last place when we recorded this week, but you know, but everyone's got to play the Padres sometime, you know.
Yeah, the Padres. That, you know, how do you lose 2 out of 3 at home to the Padres? Anyway, we talked about that last week. And they'll get another shot of the Padres coming up next week. Chicago Cubs come to town this weekend. Cubs are 7-8 overall. The Cubs Twitter was like freaking out yesterday. I actually did not even really pay attention to much of Cubs Twitter, but I got on to some of the conversation because I have in TweetDeck a Coors Field column set up. So, of course, there was a whole lot of Coors Field, good place to wake up the bats. Everything will be great. But the Cubs lost 5-3 in their last game to the St. Louis Cardinals. That was yesterday. Again, we're recording on Wednesday. They were... I don't want to say rained out. They were postponed due to inclement weather today. It does not say rain. Inclement weather today, rescheduled for tomorrow, the 19th, and then they will hit town on 4/20. You know what I'm saying? The Cubs had also been postponed 2 previous days. Their opener against St. Louis on the 16th and their finale against Atlanta. But the freak out among Cubs Twitter seems to be that team's not scoring a whole lot of runs. They got blanked in back-to-back games by the Marlins and the Reds back on April 1st and 2nd. Then they scored 1 run in a loss to Pittsburgh at home and were shut out by Atlanta. Those were on the 12th and 13th. And then they've only played 2 games in the 5 days since then. So, you know, first of all, none of us have any sympathy for you. But second of all, you know, it's a team coming in with its own type of struggles. Also, they already just hate Tyler Chatwood, which is really something. Yesterday, he goes out, very Tyler Chatwood day. I love how, and we kind of talked about this, I don't wish anything ill upon Tyler Chatwood. Because I always liked him when he was here.
I'm glad he's rich
very
now.
Good dude. Yeah. Yeah, makes a ton of money. That's great. But Tyler Chatwood's ills were not caused by Coors Field. And I can tell you how you know that's true. Today at home in Chicago, or yesterday at home in Chicago, 4 2/3, 1 hit, 2 runs, 7 strikeouts, 7 walks.
That's very Tyler Chatwood.
That is
very
Tyler
chatty.
Chatwood's problem. So, yeah. Sorry, Cubs fans, you didn't get a guy that you're rescuing from Coors Field as the discussion at first went along. But anyway, neither here nor there.
And they're paying $40 million for home road splits that involve Coors Field. I mean, good luck, you know?
And just, like, keeping their fingers crossed.
Not everything Theo Epstein touches turns to gold, guys. Sorry. He ended two streaks. He also paid Jason Hayward $180 million. He paid Carl Crawford $160 million. He made that god-awful trade that basically got him packing from Boston. Not everything turns to gold for Theo Epstein. Calm down with that, guys.
Exactly. Slow your roll, people. So anyway, Cubs coming to town. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But your overall impressions from this road trip where nothing made sense. They go 5-2. They can't hit with runners in scoring position. They're walking everybody. And they still win back-to-back series in Washington and Pittsburgh. What?
I mean, the two games they lost were when Max Scherzer started and then the final day of the road trip today when they had a 12:30 local time start. Those games can be kind of a wash at times. It is interesting. They had their two biggest wins of the season on this road trip, two four-run wins. That is as much as they have won by in a game this year. They've only got tacos twice, and none since April 2nd this year. They did not get tacos on the road trip at all. They did not get tacos at all. But what I'm loving from this team that, besides today, the bullpen gave up 5 runs on 7 hits and 4 innings. Most of that, don't want to be mean here. The lesser guys in this Rockies bullpen, Scott Oberg, Antonio Senzatella, and Mike Dunn gave up 5 runs in 4 innings of work on 7 hits. But previously on that road trip, the bullpen gave up a grand total of 3 earned runs in the first 6 games of that road trip. And that's something that's always going to play. If you have that bullpen, which the Rockies thought they were going to have coming into the year because they put a lot of money into that bullpen, if you had that bullpen performing consistently like that, you're going to win a lot of those close type of games. And these grind out games when the team isn't scoring that many runs, it's going to be close. It's probably going to be low scoring. You're going to need to have that shutdown bullpen, that super bullpen, as it were, to come in and put out fires. And for the most part, that's what these guys have done. Adam Ottavino has been, not arguably, he has been the best relief pitcher in baseball this year. And honestly, it's not even close. 22 strikeouts, 1 walk. He's allowed 2 hits in 10 and two-thirds innings. Nobody has gotten a piece of Adam Ottavino this year.
If
against
you didn't
lefties,
read it yesterday, by the way, Anthony retweeted it. The story on FanGraphs from Jeff Sullivan about Adam Ottavino is as fascinating a story. And this seems like it comes out once a year about Adam, something that Adam is doing that's just like light years ahead of everybody else. But go read that story on FanGraphs because it is in just an enveloping story. Like, it sucks you in and it's so interesting. Anyway, continue.
Because remember a couple of years ago when he was struggling and he realized that he read a FanGraphs article and saw that people were using fastballs at the higher part of the zone to get pop-ups, which goes across the generic line of thinking for someone in Coors Field. Oh, keep the ball on the ground.
Yeah.
Well, if you get infield pop-ups, they're not going to travel out of the ballpark. It's not the moon. So this year, Adam Ottavino against lefties, 1-for-17, with 11 strikeouts. Against righties, he is 1-for-14 with 11 strikeouts. Adam Ottavino has been the best relief pitcher in baseball, and it is not close. And he's not alone, by the way, in that bullpen. Wade Davis, he is 8-of-9 in save opportunities. The one save he blew, the team ended up winning that game. He's got an ERA in the low twos. Jake McGee, same ERA in the low twos. He has been outstanding. Brian Shaw got nicked a couple of times, but he's been overall good, and he's working a lot, as he always does. 11 games, he's got an ERA in the high threes, but he's been more solid than not. And those are the guys that you paid the money for. You expect that to happen. You add Adam Ottavino onto that. You can survive your starting rotation not going that deep into games because you have those guys that aren't going to allow too many base runners in the late innings, and that has been the key so far to this Rockies offense or this Rockies team. If the offense isn't, going as they normally will, this team is going to hit, but they're probably not going to hit how they're constructed right now.
Yeah.
The good thing is the bullpen has been fantastic, and that is the best part of the season so far for the Rockies.
So far everything is working out according to the plan that you figured was the plan coming into this year. And the thing that is not working out is the thing you're worried about not working out, and that's the offense. This just came across, tweeted one moment ago by Zach Buchanan from The Athletic. Quote, Taiwan Walker will have Tommy John surgery, partial UCL tear.
Yeah.
D-backs pitcher who was,
saw that one coming.
Yeah, taken out for what they said was a forearm strain. That seems to have become the new in vogue language for what could possibly be Tommy John. It just seems like we hear that a lot.
Right.
Which also worries me because Rockies pitching prospect Riley Pint was removed from his last start with what was deemed a forearm issue. We haven't seen him since, to my knowledge. But we're not going to speculate on that. But from what I have heard, it might not be great news about Riley Pint. But anyway, we haven't heard anything to confirm or deny that. But he's only pitched one game this season, one third of an inning, two walks, didn't strike out a batter, five runs, three of them earned on two hits, and he just didn't look fully healthy. We'll talk about that if there is any news coming down the line. But big blow to the Arizona Diamondbacks with Taiwan Walker. Going down with a UCL tear. Good dude, too. Taiwan Walker's a really good guy. And that's that. And one thing about the D-backs that I really don't like is they have a lot of really likable guys on that team. Like, I don't like them, but, like, Ty Walker's a great dude. Archie Bradley's a great dude. I'm sorry. I know the triple. Paul Goldschmidt seems like a great guy. Like, I don't like that at all.
Paul Goldschmidt definitely has bodies in his basement.
You think so? You think he's one of those
totally.
Guys? Like, he projects, like, oh, this nice guy. Oh, we had no idea. We just thought it was a weird. He told us that he had, like a taxidermy lab down there. We didn't think anything in the smell.
I just thought he was a hunter.
This conversation went weird. Like, the bullpen's doing exactly what you're asking. I think there is still what's going to be the hinge point of this team. Aside from whether or not the offense is going to hit, because as we're told, they're going to hit. But I think you touched on it. Those guys who you're relying on for less crucial roles in the bullpen, those are, to me, right now, your make or break guys. Because if you continue getting short outings from your pitching staff, Chad Bettis and John Gray not included, and John, you know, has the ability, obviously, as we saw in San Diego, to be dominant and go late in games. He also has the ability to struggle if things start to snowball on him. He had, the one bad inning against San Diego that mushroomed against him. Kind of the same thing against Washington. He's cruising along in that game through his first five plus innings, then runs into trouble in the sixth. But the guys who need to be able to build a bridge, if your team is still in a position to win and your starter isn't going deep, then you need Scott Oberg to give you effective innings. You need Chris Russen, Antonio Senzatella, Mike Dunn. Those guys have to be effective because Wade Davis and Jake McGee and Adam Ottavino and Brian Shaw, those guys don't do you a whole lot of good at the back end of the bullpen if you can't hand them leads in order to get the door closed on them. Thankfully, Rockies are 11-9 through 20 games. I think if you would have told us all at the beginning of the season they'd be 11-9, you'd probably think, yeah, it sounds about right.
Okay, yeah, sure, that'd be great.
They're also hitting .214 as a team.
Also not great.
Not great. They're OPSing .666 as a team. So, like, there are things that are glaring weaknesses right now. This is the worst offense, numbers-wise, in the National League right now. With a .214 batting average, that is the lowest team batting average in the National League. And you're the Colorado Rockies. And if you are unable to hit, your ballpark is going to burn you in what it does to your pitching staff. The only team that is worse, oddly enough, than the Rockies in Major League Baseball hitting as a team, the Cleveland Indians, who are batting .208 as a team. But Cleveland is 9-6 in first place in the division, and they have that pitching staff, and they don't have Coors Field to contend with. So that's what worries you right now. If the Rockies are unable to, they need those middle guys, those linchpin guys in the bullpen to be good, because it doesn't feel like there are going to be a whole lot of games that the Rockies are going to get in and have to muscle out a 12-11 win and be able to do that this year, at least not with this lineup right now.
Yeah, that .214 batting average, by the way, is by far the worst ever by the Rockies, by any team for the Rockies through 20 games. The previous worst was when a team was hitting .246. That is 32 points better. That was back in 2011. You know,
it is
a little bit of a concern. Now, the 27 home runs, it's up in the top 10 in terms of the Rockies teams through 20 games, 27 homers. But that's, you know, 32 points worse than their previous worst batting average through 20 games, and they're 11-9.
The Rockies have 141 hits as a team. 27 of them are home runs. They're the worst hitting team in the National League, but they have the most home runs in the National League. To give you a comparison, the Pittsburgh Pirates, oddly enough, because given the last 3 days, with the exception of today, you wouldn't really think this, but they're the best offense in the National League right now, batting .265 as a team. They've got 163 hits as a team through 18 games. Rockies have played 20. They've got 141 hits. Of the Pirates' 163 hits, they've got 20 homers. 35 doubles, that's 10 more than the Rockies. 6 triples, that's 4 more than the Rockies. They've also scored substantially more runs, 99 compared to 76 for the Rockies. There are just a lot of concerning things in that offense right now. The offense, which I don't think we ever thought we would say as a Colorado Rockies podcast, the offense is the area of concern. The area
is
crucial.
Absolutely.
Is that middle part of the bullpen. But the offense right now, woof.
Well, and right now, Bud Black isn't asking his starters to not necessarily go deep in games, but not throw a lot of pitches in these games. The most pitches that a starting pitcher has thrown for the Rockies is 101. And that was that start for Kyle Freeland at Washington last Friday when he only lasted 4 2/3 innings.
Yeah.
And that is the most pitches thrown by a Rocky starter this season. Guys have pitched well. I mean, Chad Bettis threw 85 pitches and 7 1/3 shutout innings yesterday.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not necessarily about the distance and the pitches. It's about the effectiveness. And Kyle Freeland today, he pitched fairly well for the first 4 innings, then kind of ran into trouble. Freeland's a guy who needs to nibble because his stuff isn't necessarily overpowering. But when he finds the middle of the plate, the ball can get hit with authority. So he's been up and down. John Gray's been up and down. Chad Bettis has been outstanding. Herman Marquez, when he's not getting ejected from games for joining brawls, has been pretty good overall. You know, you're going to let the guys go through this cold portion of April when the weather has been really shitty. You're going to let them take a break, put more onus on the bullpen early, and hoping that the starters can go deeper into games later in the season. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, when the Rockies have a starter go 6 innings, they are 6-2 this year. And that has happened obviously 8 times out of 20 games. So it's not like it hasn't happened, but you know, it's good that we're starting to see signs that these starters are going to be able to go longer in games and be more effective, because when the weather is cold and shitty, like it has been, that should benefit the pitcher a lot more. We saw that in the first 2 games in Pittsburgh, just 2 miserable days in Pittsburgh. It was snowing. It was 30 degrees. Nobody wanted to be there. And Herman Marquez and Chad Bettis took advantage, got a couple of early gift runs from the Rockies and ran with it. And that's, you know, how you can win close games like that. But that's kind of the recipe for success. If you can get 6 innings out of your starting rotation, you hand it to that bullpen, your Ottavinos, your Shaws, your McGees, your Wade Davis, and you can lock it up no matter what the score of the game is. And the Rockies haven't really, they haven't been able to win those low scoring games because they haven't really had that kind of shutdown bullpen. They've had guys in the bullpen who have been good before or good in stretches before, but they've never had consistently multiple 3-4 guys they can count on to get out late in games. They've never had that before. They never had what they possess on their team right now. They have never, ever had that as a bullpen. 4 lockdown guys. So they're not asking their starters to do much. They're asking them to keep them around in the game. That's all they're asking. It's not like it used to be where, like, you know, the Rockies got to bludgeon teams to death and score 10 runs. Or if the starter doesn't go, you know, 6-7 innings, you know, the team has nobody else to get the last 9 outs. It's not like that anymore. The Rockies need 5-6 innings from their starters, keep them around in the game, and then hand it over to that bullpen. It's fun that the recipe that Jeff Bridish won has worked so far.
Yeah.
The offense, it's not there, but we knew going to be coming in because it was not a great offense last year. And, you know, it was not a great offense last year, and they didn't do anything to improve it. So it's not surprising that the offense has struggled, but you're hoping that when the weather warms up, that some guys start hitting a little bit better because, you know, the weather has been terrible all across the country, obviously. The postponements have been insane. You're just hoping that some of those guys will start hitting. Obviously, they get Nolan back. They've missed Nolan for almost his entire road trip, and they still won 5-7. They get Nolan back on Friday against the Cubs. Charlie's been hitting, lights out. DJ's been hitting. Hopefully, it's more than those 3 guys, just like it was last year.
Yeah, at some point, somebody's got to start. Like, that's the thing. Right now, you kind of take it from anybody. And, you know, we covered how strange it is to have Ryan McMahon on the roster and not have Ryan McMahon playing regular time. And
the silver lining is that he's getting playing time at third base, oddly
yeah,
enough,
no, yeah, while that's Nolan's good.
Been suspended. And, like, you know, great. He was, you know, the numbers still are very much not there for Ryan McMahon. But the good news is he is putting together better at bats. In that Pittsburgh, he had base hits in back-to-back games now. He drove in a run yesterday. He walked and got a base hit today. Still striking out way too much. But, hey, shocker, when he gets consistent at bats, he's putting together better at bats. That's
amazing.
Weird how that works.
Amazing. Yeah.
Who
it's,
knew?
Who would have thought? I just wonder how long this goes before you kind of as a...
A change is made?
Yeah, you have to make some type of move, right? I mean, you're the Colorado Rockies.
Literally any move.
You're going to get obliterated when you start playing large swaths of your schedule at home if your team can't hit. And there is not, as much as it's hilarious to trot out the meme, there is nothing, or the meme, if you're Bryce Harper, there is nothing that says just because you play at Coors Field, you're going to be able to hit. The Rockies, yes, will they have better offensive numbers? Yes, everybody has better offensive numbers at home. Will the Rockies be better than the average team at home? Yes. But if you're a 214 overall hitting team, then what are you at home, a 230 hitting team? Like, it's not going to be pretty.
Right, I mean.
So, The Rockies, by the way, opponents at Coors Field are hitting 267. And Rockies hitters are hitting 226.
Not as great.
Not great. Not great. And bad on the road, too. Rockies are hitting 210 as a team, 226 for opponents. But anyway, I guess the point of that conversation is to get to what do you change then? You know, we talked at length about Ryan McMahon and his situation. I think we stand by our comments from last week and the fact that you've got a guy who you are – I think pretty confident in being an above average major league hitter, and you're not getting him regular at bats except for when he's forced into the lineup due to a suspension. But I mean, the guys who are coming off the bench for this team right now are just not getting the job done. Mike Tauchman is 1-for-20. Not getting much there. Tony Wolters is 3-for-22. Pat Valleca, who we really like, and we talked about this a lot. Pat Valleca is 2-for-35. And Pat Valleca's played in 17 games this year. Valleca's played in 17 games. Ryan McMahon has played in 18 games, but the vast majority of those at the start of the season were pinch hitting appearances. So yeah. It's like right now, outside of Nolan, Chuck, and DJ, nobody's hitting. Chris Iannetta to an extent.
Yes.
Trevor Story's got
Net has been great. Yeah.
But like, yeah. Cargo is not really hitting. Gerardo Parra's has had a couple of decent stretches. Ian Desmond has fallen off of a – I didn't think there was any more cliffs that Ian Desmond could fall off of. Like, I figured he was already, like, on the Earth's floor, but apparently not. Ian Desmond, you know, through the first six games of the season, Ian Desmond had hits in the first five games of the year, one or two hits in the first five games he played this year. Going into play on April 5th, he was batting 421, 421, 789. Now he's batting 162, 194, 353. Ian Desmond.
That was a pretty steep drop off.
No, Ian Desmond, in those five games, had eight hits. He's got three hits in 14 games since.
He's hitting the ball on the ground 71% of the time. But he had that game-winning home run on Sunday.
Which is great. You know, and he did it in Washington against his old team. That's fine.
He is 3-for-49 in the last 14 games. Oh. Two of those hits are home runs. 3-for-49.
Like, how?
74% of the balls he has made contact with his bat have gone on the ground in that time.
Goodness gracious. Just
3-for-49.
Man, I do not get it at all.
Now, the one thing that may, in fact, force the Rockies' hand, something that happened today in the game, Cargo made a nice diving catch of a sinking line drive off the bat of Starling Marte and was lifted for a pinch hitter in the next inning. They're saying he tweaked his hamstring. They are not sure of the severity. Couple that with the fact that Gerardo Parra will start serving his four-game suspension on Friday.
Yeah.
The Rockies are going to need an outfielder, perhaps two. So,
you cannot replace a suspended player on the roster. Everybody talked about, why did Nolan take his suspension right now? Why not continue the appeal? Well, if he continued his appeal and Gerardo Parra continued his appeal, if they both get suspended at the same time, then you're down two guys on your bench because you can't replace them with call-ups. So you have to stagger those. You have to draw out one of them with the appeal and the other one not. I think if you're the Rockies, you kind of figure, well, we're on the road. We're probably going to drop these games anyway away from home in two difficult places to play. A really good
Rockies
team.
You're facing Elise Scherzer in Strasburg, two of those games.
So you have Nolan sit those games out so he can be back for the Cubs and Padres. Then you happen to go out and win 5-7 on the road. That's just gravy. But now you're getting Nolan back for the homestand. That's huge. For Gerardo Parra, you know, it's a little bit easier to lose him. But now if you're losing also Carlos Gonzalez, then you're going to have to make the move. And
3-49.
I can't
get over that. Ian Desmond, 3-49 the last 14 games.
I don't...
3-49!
I'll be fair, I don't
That's
know...
That's so hard to do.
At the major league level...
At the major league level.
Right, exactly. I don't know how often hitting coaches really make valuable, gigantic contributions at the major league level to guys. But if you're Dwayne Espy, or you're Jeff Salazar as an assistant hitting coach on this team... Don't you have to try something? Like, Ian Desmond and Trevor Story are the two most glaring examples. They have been the same exact hitters for the last 2 years, and nothing seems to have changed. Like, there's nothing different about their approaches. There's nothing. Well, I shouldn't say that because I'm not.
To be fair, they're opposite. They're also opposite approaches.
Now, yeah, exactly. That's
Trevor tries to the ball
I
in the air
on the radio
at all
the
times.
Other day. If you could combine Ian Desmond's struggles with Trevor Story's struggles, you probably have two pretty good hitters because Trevor Story can't do anything but hit the ball in the air.
Yeah.
Ian Desmond can't do anything but hit it on the ground. If you somehow made them a hybrid, Ian Story is probably a great player.
Yeah. That's a line
Trevor
drive in
Desmond,
the books.
Right there. Just switch him up a little bit.
Yeah.
But I don't like. How do you let this go this long, this consistently bad? I just don't understand that.
Right now, it's because they don't have any other options.
Yeah.
Now, David Dahl was just activated off the DL in Albuquerque. He's probably going to need a little bit more time. He had some wicked illness because it's always something with David Dahl. It's not his fault. Just is always something with David Dahl. Hopefully, I think he just wanted to hang out with his adorable new dog.
Yeah, that
rookie.
Could be. Holy cow.
Holy cow, is that dog adorable. He was activated yesterday, made his re-debut, as it were. Yeah. He had two games earlier this year. Went 0-4 with three strikeouts, but the fact that he's healthy and playing in baseball games is more important. Raimel Tapia has had a little bit of a powerful start to his time. He's only hitting .235, but the OPS of .868, four homers, 13 ribbies. Struck out 15 times, but also walked 8. He is probably the first one in line for the call-up, I would imagine, because he's been in the big leagues before. I believe he's on the 40-man roster. He would have to be, right?
He is.
I would have to guess. So he'd probably be getting the first call-up, because I don't think you can continue to throw Mike Tauchman up there. Nothing against Mike Tauchman. I don't think the big leagues is the right place for him right now. But especially if you're going to be down an outfielder, you need someone who can come in and play a few times and get a few starts a week because you're going to have to probably. And Raimel Tapia should be that guy for the Rocks coming up.
You know what I guarantee happens? Just because it's the Rockies and you can't ever seem to project what realistically you think is the best option that never seems to go down, I guarantee you Noel Cuevas gets the call. Noel Cuevas has played 13 games, and he's had a great start to the season.
He's having a great start to the year, yes.
Yeah, but it would not surprise me at all if they make the call and bring up Noel Cuevas, who I'm hearing everybody listening to the show going, Who is Noel Cuevas? Noel Cuevas has been fantastic to start the year.
They have to make a move to get him on the 40-man. So
he's on the 40-man as of, I think they added him this past offseason. He's on the 40-man, but... Yeah, it would have to be – you would have to DL Cargo because, again, you can't replace a suspended player. So it's – I don't know. But it just seems like, Tapia again. David Dahl's coming back. And they'll be like, no, not so fast. Come on up, Noel Cuevas.
Shut up. Shut up. You're
you
getting Noel Cuevas.
You don't get this at all. You don't get your excitement at all. Noel Cuevas has never played in the big leagues. He started his career in the Dodgers system, came over to the Rockies back in 2015 when the Rockies were still in the confines of New Britain, when they were the Rock Cats before the Hartford Yard Goats became the AA affiliate. Same franchise, just moved. But anyway, they're going to have to do something. Well, I got to do something. George is already in there. So let's dive into some Ask PDPs. We've kind of talked about where things are as of right now. And we solicited for your Ask PDP questions and we got a lot of responses. And we've got some good ones. One, I'm going to get out of the way right now. There's a new account at Spleen of Dahl. The name is David Dahl Spleen. And the question is, do I have potential as a Rockies Twitter novelty account? Yeah. 3 years ago.
I think we're kind of over the blank accounts. I think Culberson's hair was where I drew the line.
Yeah, yeah. This is the problem with those accounts. People think they're a great idea, and then they forget about them in 2 weeks. Like, that account could start off just fire, just slinging jokes left and right, and then whoever is running at Spleen of Dahl is going to forget that they have that account, and it'll go dormant.
Like
when Ottavino Slider?
Yeah, sure.
That account was fine. Yeah, it was good for a while. Yeah. And, like, I don't think Ottavino Slider is – I don't think it's done anything.
It's like when Trill Ballins, like, retweets, like, old dead movie accounts, and he gets, like, like Mortimer starring Johnny Depp, and he has, like, hasn't tweeted since 2013. Like, I love – it's that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Ottavino Slider, by the way, has not tweeted since July 22nd of last year.
Which, like,
so
dude.
It's just, you know. And you were a good one, Ottavino Slider.
And also, remember – you have it when you see him playing so well.
Yeah.
I mean, my
How
goodness.
How do you not remember that? So anyway, we'll take some real questions. We have a good one from Ryan Ladika, and I think we've discussed this one before, but what is both of your guys' favorite Rockies Twitter meme?
Meme.
Meme, if you're Bryce Harper. There, so I know we did this before because I know I said a couple, and then, like, as soon as we got done, it was like my jerk store moment from Seinfeld, and I just remembered all these other ones that I would have rather had. The coolest thing is great because we took something that everybody else used and we made it our own thing. Like, that's pretty great in how
that's
that
our
evolved.
Work now. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know what my favorite would be.
Oh man.
I do very much enjoy, I tried to create a new one this year, which I've fallen off over the last week or so, but Dumb Rockies quotes in which I give the player Tribune.
I really like those. Those were really funny.
I was happy with that.
you know, they're going to hit a good one. Like what more can you do with that one? You know, you just know they're going to hit. Boy.
Yeah. There's too many.
I know.
Too many good ones.
The run differential, like, you know, that's not
yeah,
a
run differential
we'll
was
last
good last
year.
I think there are a few that we can take credit for, but the godfather of all of them on Rocky's Twitter is Connor Farrell. And Connor's bio now says, quote, burdened by the memes I helped create.
Yeah.
Connor, like, everything good is because of Connor.
For the most part.
I feel like we had a hand in a few of them, but, you know, a lot of the good stuff is all from Connor.
He's the meme king. Yeah.
He is the king. Yeah. That's like one I think we got to think about. Maybe we'll tweet out an answer later.
Sorry, Ryan. All right. From Zach Wengrovius, you had to listen to two people argue for the rest of your life about one topic. Would you rather they argue about pitcher wins or RBI?
Oh, my God. I think
I'd rather blow my brains out personally.
Do I have the option of being like the dude in Get Out with the cotton in my ears? I think, Lord, that is a good question. I think the dumber pitcher wins is the dumber conversation.
Yes.
I think there is an argument that you can make that some guys are better in the middle of a lineup driving in runs. I think it's a dumb argument, but I think you can make the argument.
They're both
Whereas
stupid arguments.
Wins,
one is way stupider than the other, I think, in my opinion. That's
yeah,
pitcher wins.
Exactly. They're both dumb. Pitcher wins is by far the dumber one, so I would absolutely rather listen to that one. Because then it would just provide me so much more rage material.
Oh, so you'd rather listen to the pitcher win argument because it's dumber.
Yeah, I'd rather listen to the dumber one. If I have to listen to it for the rest of my life. Yeah.
I'd rather listen to the RBI one because you could, like, at least, you know,
you could have fake, some type of conversation.
Like you didn't want to kill yourself the whole time.
Okay. Okay. By the way, we're no longer rushed for time during this PDP in-moment pause for a production meeting. I just got a text from the guy who oversees the Sports Buddies program at Big Brothers Big Sisters, and my little brother had to cancel today. So I don't have to leave in a little bit, so we can take our sweet time with these ass PDPs. This is the kind of content that people crave.
Great. More time with you. That's all I wanted.
Crave, because I heard you say
crave. Crave.
Crave. Okay, so you would go RBIs, I would go pitcher wins.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good. That's good. Zach Wingrovius, again, we've touched on this before. Zach's a little Rockies Twitter ninja. He always comes out with just
a little
Alexi stuff.
Amarista, like a Twitter Amarista. Yeah.
But he's like good. And he just like jumps out, great stuff. Then he recedes back into the darkness. We don't see him for a little while. Comes back out. Another great question, another great point. I love him. Let's go to Tyler Q in Utah, another one of our longtime and loyal pals. Quote, what salad dressing and possible pizza dipping condiment is best?
He's just trying to make us say that ranch is the best.
Yeah, I feel like this has been put up to by Big Ranch. Big Ranch. Yeah, Tyler's in the pocket of Big Ranch.
Yeah, Big Ranch has his hands all over Tyler Q in Utah.
Got their tentacles, yeah. Their fatty mass with tentacles all over.
I gotta say, there are a few things that I like less than ranch.
I
like ranch chips. Like, the idea of ranch is fine. Okay. Ranch as like a dipping sauce is disgusting. I hate
ranch. It's only a dipping option if every other dipping option is off the table.
And also spit.
Yeah. And it's really only... And it's really only a dipping option for, like, wings. And, like, we're both half Italian. My mom is from New York City. Like, we've both grown up in very pizza-respectful households. You don't dip pizza in anything, Tyler. Goddamn people from Utah. That's your first problem. You're dipping the pizza in the first place.
Yeah. And if you have to, it's got to be a... Like, if you're going to do it, make it a white pizza and dip it in marinara sauce so it's a real pizza.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I don't know. That's just me.
Or even better, dip it in like a spicy marinara. Marinara.
Sure.
A nice, good with the crushed red peppers and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But as far as salad dressing would go, I'm like a stinky cheese kind of guy. I'm like a blue cheese or a gorgonzola. Those are my salad dressings of choice. But also, if I'm going to make a salad at home, then it's like the Annie's Organic Goddess dressing. That stuff is phenomenal. And it's also like 35 grams of fat per teaspoon. It's terrific. Yeah, it's like, you know, the salad that you put everything healthy in, just dump fat on top of it. It's great.
If I don't make a salad at home, I'm going to go out for a salad. and then I'm going to not do that. And I'm going to order something else. So,
not bad.
All right. From Nathaniel Hilliard at Nate Hilliard. How is it possible that Paddy Warning Track Power is even our best option at first base? No disrespect intended. I respect the hell out of him for having that kind of versatility. Seems like a legit dude. That being said, the depth at first has to be a concern still, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think Pat Villega is a terrific option to have on the bench because of what he can do. Versatility. You can put him in anywhere in the infield. However, you want that to be his role. You don't want backup first baseman to be his role. And for whatever reason,
or starting
first baseman, backup to starting first baseman has been his role this year. That's what's so curious and confusing about this whole thing. So, yeah, I think that's definitely the case. The thing that really kind of confuses me most about it is like the conversation of like, why is Ryan McMahon on the roster is obviously one thing, but like, what is your plan? If the plan was not to use Ryan McMahon, Pat Villega is obviously not a long-term solution at first base. You don't have anything else. Like, then go back to Ian Desmond regularly.
Yeah.
If that's the point, Jordan Patterson is
3 for 49.
Oh, yeah. God. 3 for 49. Jordan Patterson's not hitting at AAA, and he's a left-handed bat, which you're already struggling with trying to figure out how to get Ryan McMahon at bats. You just don't have any options, and I'm confused by that. So, yeah, I would say that's certainly an area of concern. And, oh, by the way, Mark Reynolds is not out there anymore. He signed a minor league deal with the Nationals, so
that's the thing.
That, like,
who would have thought the guy they missed the most early on would be Mark Reynolds?
Yep.
But it's totally true.
Yeah.
They miss Mark Reynolds.
Very strange. Very strange. Here's a good one from Andrew Duran. Quote, how excited are you that Mr. Tom Murphy is doing well in the minors? Can, hopefully, mean good things, right? Before we jump into this, Tom Murphy is still a ranked prospect in the system. I had somebody respond to me and say, well, that seems weird. Well, he hasn't exhausted his rookie status at the major league level, and he's still a fairly highly viewed prospect. He's number 11 in the system, according to MLB Pipeline, number 12, according to Baseball America. But the numbers for Tom Murphy right out of the gate this year are fantastic for AAA Albuquerque, and he's been doing it kind of at every respect. He's hitting with a little bit of pop. Murphy in total is batting .413, .472, .804. He's got four home runs through his first 12 games and also six doubles. So 10 of his 19 hits have gone for extra bases. So he's hitting the ball with authority the way you want him to. But your thoughts?
I mean, it's kind of now or never for Tommy Murphy.
Yeah.
I'm a fan. I really want him to do well. I want him to do well at the big league level. It's got to happen soon if it's going to happen. And we've been through this before, but like, if he's going to do it, it's got to be soon. He had a very limited run in 2016 where he really impressed, where he hit .273 in 21 games, five homers, OPS to over 1,000 in that time. Only got 24 at bats at the big league level last year, and he went 1-for-24. He has nothing left to prove in AAA. He's shown that he can dominate the PCL. He had over 1,000 OPS in 2016. He had a tough year last year at injuries, but this year he's already hitting again, hitting over 400. At some point, you got to see what you have with him. I know you have Iannetta, and Iannetta's been great so far. He's a very solid guy, a veteran guy. As long as he stays healthy, he will be your starter. I think you need to get Tommy Murphy up here. And, Tony Walters isn't the answer as a backup. I want to see Tommy Murphy in there, if at all possible.
Tony Walters was a very fine first year debut player. I mean, he surprised everybody in 2016.
A hell of a Rule 5 pick.
Exactly. Yeah. He was great, and Tony Walters is an easy guy to cheer for. He provides you a little bit of depth as well, because not only can he play behind the plate, he can also play infield position. So maybe there's a chance that you keep him around because of that, but he is not your catching option of the future. They have long looked at Tom Murphy as that. The shine is kind of somewhat worn off on Dom Nunez, but Dom Nunez is back in AA this year. Had a rough year last year, but was also like 20 years old at AA, which is not an easy thing to do. There's still the potential you're developing somebody behind Tom Murphy, but the point being, you kind of know it's not going to be Tony Walters. So at what point is it put up or shut up time for Tom Murphy? And I think that point is coming, especially with the continued struggles of Tony Walters. And again, a dude who's so easy to cheer for and was so much fun when he was playing well, but it's just not a major league bat. And that's the difference with the Rockies and with Tom Murphy, is they feel that Tom Murphy not only has an adequate to a little bit above average defensive profile, but also can hit as an above average major league catcher. Tony Walters right now is a pretty significantly below average major league hitter, and you just can't stick around with that for too long. Chris Iannetta, he's signed through next year, but he's not your long-term option. There's a 2020 team option, but by the end of the contract, Chris Iannetta is going to be like 38 years old. So at what point do you kind of, you know, it just doesn't make sense to continue trotting out a guy on a day-in, day-out basis if you have an option below him that you think can effectively serve your organization for multiple seasons into the future. I think the best-case scenario for the Rockies, Tom Murphy is your starter by July or August on, you know, 3 out of 5 days, and that's what you have going forward. To be honest, I think it's probably pretty likely that was the discussion with Chris Iannetta in the first place was,
we're
going to bring you in, you're going to be the starter, but we need you to bring these guys along. And Chris Iannetta is the perfect guy to do that.
Correct.
So, you know, I think that's, if this is going to finally be that stage in Tom Murphy's development, it needs to happen soon. I agree. By the way, have I been under a rock, or have you ever heard of Chris Iannetta's nickname being Destructo Beam?
I have never heard that before in my
Me
life,
neither.
But I kind of love it.
Reference page.
Destructo Beam?
Destructo Beam. Never in my life have I ever heard that.
Never once have I heard that.
Yeah. Odd.
I don't hate it.
Me neither. Seems kind of fun.
Yeah.
Probably some weird, kind
of. All right. From Ryan Bloom at Bloomer Deluxe, one of our favorite follows on here. What 80s song, comprised chiefly of forced name-based rhymes, is better? Paul Simon's 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover or Kenny Loggins' Footloose? I will say neither. It is Tony Basil's Mickey. Hey, Mickey.
I'll go Footloose because that song drives me up the goddamn wall. But yeah, Hey, Mickey is a good one, too. A good one in that it's atrocious.
Yes.
That song is... I was having this conversation with somebody the other day. The 80s... There is nothing
about the 80s that
appeals to me. Like, nothing about the 80s appeals to me. When I think about the 80s, everything, with the exception of the San Junipero episode of Black Mirror, nothing about the 80s seems like it would have been any sort of positive. The clothes were terrible. The music was terrible. There was, like, you know... just horrible things going on in the world, although nowadays it looks like a paradise.
Hell yeah.
I just don't... what were they doing in the 80s? What were they doing?
It's like the Austin Powers joke. You know? Like, oh, I want to see what goes on in the 80s. And he says, nothing. It was a flock of seagulls, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I don't get it at all with the 80s. It's very strange. let's see. We had another couple of good ones from... you know me. I'm always down with the... this was the one again from Ryan Bloom. What video game would you most like to play on the new scoreboard?
Donkey Kong Country.
Oh,
it's got a lot of nooks. Like, you know, there's a lot of DK Country stuff that's like really like high up. You got to find it like above the actual screen itself. There's some secret levels up there, and with the new scoreboard, you probably just see them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's an interesting choice. Huh. I had not thought about going like the 64-bit route.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways to answer this question because, like, on the one hand, like, my initial reaction is I want to play, like, Gran Turismo. I want, like, a simulator that, like, I can lose myself in that board. But then, like, I also want to play the show. I think it would be great to be in a Major League ballpark and playing a Major League baseball game. That would be a ton of fun and very meta. And also kind of dumb because you could probably just, like, fake running around the bases. You're in the actual stadium. So maybe that's a stupid choice.
So it's like role-playing. Yeah, like an RPG.
Yeah, like an RPG game. I think it would be really fun and also just absolutely goddamn terrifying to play The Last of Us. Did you play that game?
I did not.
That game, I have, like, never been as emotionally exhausted finishing a video game as The Last of Us. The premise of The Last of Us, there's an outbreak, of course, of a, you know, a virus.
Sure, gotta kill some people. Yeah.
Yada, yada. It's always a zombie thing. But the premise of it is there's a girl with an immunity. You are the character trying to smuggle her to an organization that theoretically can help build a vaccine out of the immunity. But it's just, like, a harrowing, terrifying game, and like the storylines in it, the way they develop the characters, that like it just sucks you in a way that video games, at least like when we were kids, did not do that. Like when we were kids, it was like, oh well, you know, Tecmo, I guess I'll run this flea flicker and try to get it to Vance Johnson.
The first one I remember like really sucking me in terms of the storyline. Do you ever play Silent Hill?
Oh, no, but I do remember hearing
Silent Hill this was about Silent Hill. Terrifying.
Yeah.
How they created such an ambiance, and it was legit scary when I was, you know, 11, 12, whenever it came out. Yeah. That'd be a fun one to play at Coors Field on the scoreboard with, like, you know, the surround sound on. That'd be freaky.
Your brain just might explode.
Yeah.
Like, it might be that terrifying. Yeah, that's how I feel like The Last of Us. Like, there were times with The Last of Us where I would have to, like, turn it off because I was, like, too unsettled. Or, like, you get too tense because you know something's going to jump around a corner and try to eat your face off.
Yes. All right, from Lance Lays, or Lance Old, I don't know. He's at LMFO. What has been more surprising this year, the Rockies winning games without Blackman and or Arenado, or Adam Ottavino's dominance?
Definitely winning games without those two. Adam, you kind of knew coming off of last year, if he could get his command back, it was going to be better than ever, Adam, because like what we were talking about a little while earlier in the show, he's just so smart. He puts so much of an extra emphasis on trying to beat hitters mentally as well as trying to beat them physically, that if he was able to get the command rein back in, he was going to dominate. But with this offense not hitting and losing its two best hitters, for what are pretty substantial swaths of the season so far, since they've only played 20 games, and still being 11-9, that has surprised the hell out of me. What do you think?
I actually think Ottavino. I mean, I think because, you know, he had such a tough year last year, I don't think we expected him to do what he's doing right now. Nobody expects that. No one should be able to do what he's doing right now, because no one does that, because he's been, like I said, the most dominant reliever in baseball right now. I don't think I expected him to be this good. I mean, he's right now, he's pre-Tommy John Adam good. Even better than that, even.
Yeah, he is.
So, you know, I don't think I expected that at all. I was expecting that Shaw and McGee and Davis would be good. I don't think we expected Ottavino to be that fourth guy in that bullpen, and that is why the Rockies are 11-9, in my opinion. They found that fourth guy they needed.
I like it. From Kyle Kercheval, Kyle says, quote, which tired take are you more sick of? You know this team will hit, or the Monfords don't care about winning?
Ooh, the cheap farts. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. I'm.
You know this team will hit is kind of a – it's a newer tired take.
Yeah, because like I think everyone is kind of on the same page with the team now. Like, oh, the Monforts are trying to win, you know.
Yeah, I think people get that now.
So, oh boy, like, yeah, I think like it's got to be this team's gonna hit, because the Monforts thing, the cheap farts. If you're still holding on to that, then yeah. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, there's several radio stations in town where you can probably get a job. I would say that one is – I'll never get tired of the Monforts don't want to win, because that's like basically what gave rise to the creation of this podcast. It's just like that dumb two-dimensional line of logic. That is what was the impetus behind creating this podcast, because nobody knows how to intelligently talk baseball in this town. And the last thing that I would ever call myself is intelligent, but I feel like we try to bring the baseball level of discussion to maybe a little bit higher level than where it was. And, you know, we created this podcast, and now there are a million Rockies podcasts. Not to take credit for it, but you know where it came from.
Well, we are definitely like the fourth best Rockies podcast.
Oh, yeah, easily. We're the, you know, we used to be your favorite Rockies podcast. So I would go with the, you know, this team's going to hit, because the other one I can't ever get tired of.
Yeah.
Never. The ultimate bulletin board material forever.
All right. From Nick Tastic at Nick the Walsh, which negative WAR Rockies player would you most like to have a beer with?
Oh, man. I think, well, I'm going to give, let me see. There are two names that are jumping into mind right now. One of them, I feel like Mike Tauchman would be a really interesting dude to have a beer with. Mike Tauchman's had a very interesting rise to the major leagues. And I don't want to go with a, you know, this is kind of a serious way to answer this, but Pat Valeika, there was the story, of course, by Ken Rosenthal on The Athletic about how Pat Valeika's father is currently in a coma due to surgery that he had to try to correct an aortic aneurysm. He had some complications from that, slipped into a coma 3 years ago. Aortic aneurysms run in my family, too, and killed my grandfather. My uncle had an aortic aneurysm removed several years ago by surgery, and I have to be screened for them relatively regularly, I guess, as I grow up. I haven't yet been. But I actually talked to Pat about that at the end of the last homestand. Just went up to him and said, like, hey, you know, reading your story and something that runs in my family. And it's weird because you don't think about those things outside of the context of, like, your own family bubble. And then reading about it, like, that it happens to other people is one thing, but that it happens, like, somebody that you're familiar with and is somewhat notable. And one of Pat's older brothers, I think it's Chris, Chris's career was cut short because he had an aortic aneurysm.
Yeah.
And so I think for that reason, I would love to have a beer with Pat Valeika, just to, you know, it's not a real common thing to share with somebody else. And so it was just a very much hit home. And that story, if you didn't get a chance to check it out, Ken Rosenthal had it up on The Athletic about Pat Valeika and his family.
Yeah,
and
go read that. That's really, that's really a must read. Yeah. Must read.
Record scratch. Wicka, wicka. Unfortunately, we had something go wrong with the recording here, and we had like 5-6 more minutes of the show, but it only picked up Anthony's audio, and my microphone stopped working. And to be fair, I know that's what everybody would prefer every episode be like of the PDB, but unfortunately, the conversation doesn't really make a whole lot of sense when you're only hearing one side of it. Thought about leaving it in just to be hilarious, but it would probably just be awkward. So here's a premature and awkward end to the Purple Dinosaur podcast. I'm going to have to cut out Anthony's bye and splice that in with mine. But hey, you got like an hour plus out of us. What else could you possibly want from us two morons? So that's it. We're undoubtedly cutting out some just gold PDP, Ask PDP answers. But, you know, you're going to have to deal with it. So until next week, apologies for this. But hey, still, love you. Bye.
Bye.